Welcome to the Better It Gets podcast, a space where we hold the prayer and belief that the better it gets, the better it gets. May these episodes serve as expanders and reminders of just how powerful you are and just how benevolent this universe is. I'm your host, Zoe Dane, feminine energy mentor and devotional union guide. Thank you for being here and believing in the magic that's available to you, and that is you. Now let's dive in. Hello, and welcome back to The Better It Gets. Today, I have the beautiful Deanna Nicole Baxter, and Deanna is more than just an Emmy Award-winning actress and storyteller. She is a visionary force for profound transformation. As a certified transformational life coach and Kundalini yoga practitioner, Deanna's journey unfolds as a testament to empowerment, deeply rooted in her fervent dedication to uplifting women, particularly women of color, through the mediums of art, ritual, storytelling, somatic practices, and yoga. A distinguished alumni of Duke University, where she majored in African and African-American studies and women's studies, Deanna's commitment to her purpose has only flourished with time. Having spent over a decade mastering spiritual principles, she has blossomed into an intuitive beacon, guiding clients to rediscover their inherent power, reclaim their voices, and embrace their most audacious dreams as a compassionate transformational life coach. Soul liberation, devotional leadership, divine union serve as the foundational pillars of Deanna's current mission in the world. As we remember and honor our gifts in others, reclaim our power, embody our divine feminine, and heal our relationship to the masculine, we create the new earth together. And we as conscious women are the stewards, says Deanna. Welcome, Deanna. It is so good to have you.
Ah, it's so good to be here. Thank you, Zoe, for having me.
Yeah. So just for the listener's sake, I met Deanna through a beautiful Kundalini yoga studio that was such a sanctuary for so many hearts called the Yogi Tree. And the beautiful angel who created the Yogi Tree passed, Jennifer Lakshmi Chand, on Valentine's Day 2 years ago. And she created a beautiful community and brought together these incredible Kundalini yoga teachers. And Deanna was one of them and is absolutely one of my favorite Kundalini yoga teachers. She brings this fire and this flair and this power and this passion that is, to me, it is like, it's woman. It is the embodiment of woman. And so I am so excited to have her on today to bring her heat, to bring her fire, to bring her fervent passion for everything that she is stewarding here for this new earth paradigm. And Deanna, I want to hand the microphone over to you to just share about, you know, what the new earth is to you. What is this new earth paradigm that you are stewarding and your passion around, you know, everything that you've studied and, you know, being this pillar for women of color and women everywhere to claim their legacy, to claim their highest timeline, to really be expressed in the totality of their femininity. Like, how did this begin for you? Where are you with it now? And what's the most alive for you?
Wow. How did this begin for me? You know, I tend to be a kinesthetic person, so I feel things more, sense things more than necessarily can put into words, but I'll do my best. I think this began for me really when I was going into college. and my studies of African-American studies, women's studies, they eventually started to just revolve and deepen into women's literature around the world. Women's activism around the world. It just really started to drop me into the outside of this Western paradigm, really, that we live on this beautiful, huge planet. And there's been so many that have come before us and that have been already stewarding the new earth, right? We didn't call it that when I was in college. But for me, the new earth is really rooted in understanding what oneness really is, meaning that everything, everyone is consciousness. And when we start to relate to the planet in that way, and we start to deepen our empathy, and we start to have reverence for life itself, we start to treat each other differently. We start to be more conscious of the way of our consciousness, our environments, how we're treating ourselves. We start to really start to love what we already have. It starts to become less and less about the game of gaining more, getting more, and starting to love what you have and share those resources, right? And then you also start, once you deepen your empathy and you recognize that everything, everyone is consciousness itself, has a consciousness, you no longer will tolerate that the hierarchy, this old paradigm that's very much rooted in patriarchy, that there's a hierarchy of being. There is not. So you'll start to stand up for the liberation of all. And also understand that that doesn't mean that everybody's going to believe the way you believe, think the way you think, or necessarily practice the way you practice. But I believe when we start to really dismantle this illusion of separateness, that we can come back to the remembrance that we are love itself and start to have deep reverence for life and for each other and for the planet. So I think that is absolutely possible. If you would have asked me this 15 years ago, I probably would have said it's fantasy. But it's happening. It's happening right now. And, you know, with all of the very painful, violent, dark things that are happening and have been happening on this planet, we just have the technology now where we're able to actually watch it in real time. There is a death happening of the old way. And we are witnessing the awakening, a great awakening happening right now, that crosses borders, that is not limited to religion, is not an awakening of the oneness on this planet. And so I have great faith, unwavering faith, that even if I don't see it in my lifetime, the ripple effect and the impact that I hope and plan to make while I'm here benefits the children that are to come after me.
Yes, so beautiful. I mean, that is ultimately it. It's like we are stewarding that higher vision through love, through the religion of love, which is all unifying, all encompassing, right? Yes. We go back to, you know, what Mary Magdalene and Yeshua were here walking the way of, divine union within and without, like unconditional, unwavering love. Like even as Jesus is on the cross, it's like, God, forgive my brothers, for they don't know what they're doing. They don't recognize that we're all one and that it's all love, right? And that patriarchy has been in place since then. And it was prophesied that they even knew that it was going to take about 2,000 years for the reclamation of the divine feminine and these ways of love, these ways of compassion, these ways of empathy. And I love that you touched on the sentience and consciousness of the planet herself, because I feel that that's where we're going to remember. She's got the codes, they're gridded in Gaia, you know, and it's like, how willing are we to slow down and drop in and feel her and remember and commune with her and feel that interconnectedness to all of life, that there are, like you said, no borders. And, you know, that if something's happening in the Middle East, it's also happening here. There's a collective quantum web that's connecting all of us. And for us to go, oh, because that's happening on the other side of the planet, it doesn't have anything to do with me. Mm-hmm. And I love that before we started this call, you shared about your studies of the Middle East and the fact that you lived in Cairo when you were 19. And I would love to talk more about that with you, hear about your journey, what pulled you there, how your time there was, and what you have to share on this.
Yeah, 19. You know, it's just like yesterday. No, I'm just kidding. What pulled me there? You know, when I went to Duke, it kind of was the beginnings of affirmative action. There was a lot of tension on that campus around affirmative action, and a lot of the legacy students there, you know, legacy meaning students that have been brought in because their parents are alum and what have you, legacy white students there in particular, were accusing us of being dumb. They were like, you don't belong here. Like, you know, you're only here because of affirmative action. So we were protesting on the campus, what have you. And I speak into that because Duke just eliminated that program. I don't know, last week, 2 weeks ago. And again, the old way is really trying to hold on to the last bit. So that being some context, Duke's history is built on tobacco. And literally built on the back of my ancestors and slavery and tobacco, which is why the university mm-hmm. itself is so rich. And so I had a lot of awareness about my own privilege being at Duke, as far as whose backs that came upon. And I had a lot of rage at the time, not only because of what was happening on the campus and people accusing brown and black folk of being dumber and the only reason we're there is because of affirmative action. But also because up until then, I felt once I started really studying in the studies that I was focused on, I was like, why didn't I know about any of this prior to? Why did the education system silence this part of not only American history, but world history? And so I had a lot of rage coming up to the point where I was like, I'm never reading a book by a dead white man again. You know, like I just had a lot of rage, and I had a lot of rage against Christianity. I was raised as a Baptist Christian. My grandparents, who had an integral part in raising me with their values, they went to church every Sunday. And at the same time, the children's Bible that my granddaddy would read to me, you know, it was a white Jesus. So I was like, this doesn't make any sense. Like I had a lot of rage around that. And so at the time I was really looking for alternative spiritual paths. And I was interested in Islam. I had also grown up in Minneapolis where I saw the Nation of Islam and, you know, black men who were leaders of their community, and the Nation of Islam is not the same as traditional Islam, let me be clear, but I'm just telling you about my influences. And so I was interested in Islam. And I think it was my sophomore year, I took a class called Women in Islam, because all of the images that I had seen of Muslim women were these oppressed women who, you know, were beat by their husbands, forced to cover themselves because their bodies were considered sinful. All of the programming I had around Muslim women, I was like, I want to learn the truth. And so there was a guest professor who came to that class, and her name is Nawala Sadawi. May she rest in peace. And Nawala Sadawi was an Egyptian feminist, womanist, writer, activist, doctor, who had not been back to Cairo in 10 years because she was exiled under the past regime, under Sadat. At this time, Mubarak is leading Egypt. And she walked into the classroom. She had this white hair and she had these like deep black eyes, just fierce. And she walked in, she was like, I want you to write down the first time that you saw God. And I was like, what? And then she was like, now I want you to write down the first time you saw the devil. And I'm like, what? Who is this woman? I love her. So I was automatically like, I fucking love her.
Yes.
And I'm forgetting the name of her book. One was Woman at Point Zero, but the one we were reading at the time, forget what the name was, but it really impacted me. Her journey and what she spoke about and her passion and her fire. And so her and I got to know each other through that class. And she invited me to Cairo. She said, I'm going back for the first time in a decade. And she was holding, she already had an organization called AWSA, Arab Women Solidarity Association. And she was going back for the first time to her homeland. And she said, come for a couple of weeks. I was like, a couple of weeks? I said, yes, of course. And I was like, a couple of weeks. So I went to the dean and proposed a study abroad program. They didn't have one at the time at Duke for Cairo, but there was an American university, AUC, we call it Gamamrekia in Cairo. And so I was able to get the, you know, credits were the same and what have you, and proposed a semester in Cairo, and the dean approved. And so that's how I ended up in Cairo.
Wow.
Yeah. So while I was there, you know, I got to be immersed in the culture. I studied Arabic before I went so that I could communicate a bit better. And it was somewhat of a culture shock, right? It's men and women are separate. Men's space is very much public space there. And I was like, oh, you know, and I respected, meaning I wasn't walking around in what I have on now. You know what I mean? but I was definitely confronted culturally with men's space being public space. And I won't go into all of that right now. That's a whole nother episode when it comes to my time there. But I lived about 15 minutes away from the Giza pyramids. And again, this is the beginning of my spiritual journey. I was still focused on which religious path should I take. But I think the most impactful thing for me while I was in Cairo was living in the hostels, which in this country we call them dorms, right? All the women are in one hostel, all the men are in the other, and there's a community space that you can come down to and both of you intermingle. I think I had a very naive view about Africa as the continent, but also coming back to the homeland, Egypt, and there's no racism there. You know, this sexism is different there. And I asked a gentleman, oh, where can I, you know, go and listen to hip hop, and where are the clubs at? And he's like, oh, you got to go where the niggers go. And I was like, what'd you say? He's like, you got to go where the niggers go. I said, well, who are the niggers? And he was like, the Sudanese. And I was like, well, you know, in my country, I said, they would call you a sand nigger, the racist. And he's like, why are you getting so upset? You're not one of them. I said, yes, I am. You know, so mind you, whoever's listening to this and isn't necessarily watching it, I'm a very light-skinned Black woman. So there's a different level of privilege there of moving in between worlds, and often am not perceived as Black. So I was automatically hit by like how deep this colonial mindset around colorism has pervaded the world. And then I also was confronted with the difference between the way women were with each other in Egypt, in Cairo, in comparison to the West, to America. When we would get together in the hostels, and these were women from all over different Arab countries, Kuwait, Lebanon, everywhere. It was like, it was so communal. They were freaked out because I had really hairy arms, and they're like, oh, we have to get rid of that hair. And they were like plucking my eyebrows, and women would like, you know, this is where those that veiled unveiled around each other and would give each other massages. And like, it would just be so, it wasn't about competition from what I had experienced in the West. Especially on Duke's campus. College for me was very rough when it came to sisterhood wounds. So there was so much beauty that I experienced there. And I felt the energy of that land. There's different codes on that land. I didn't know what that was at the time, right? But I feel like for me, Cairo was the first time that I was confronted with my privilege as an American woman. I recognized how privileged I was to have clean drinking water. You know, my story up until then was so rooted in victim, like, oh, I'm a Black woman who was raised by a single mom and we grew up this way on Section 8. And then going to another country where the gap between poor and rich is so huge, I recognized how much privilege I have, and I came back even more devoted to being a loving impact on this planet and also communicating the truths of the women that I met that were Muslim there. Eventually, I decided not to choose Islam as a path, but it also is the only religion where there's literally women's rights written into the Quran. So anyhow, I could go on and on about that. I know we're not focusing on that, but that was my trip to Cairo. And I fell in love with a Sudanese man, by the way. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So the women's rights are written into the Quran, but they are still like repressed and oppressed. So I'm confused.
So just like Christians can say they are Christians and can take verses from the Bible and use them in ways that are oppressive. Same thing.
I see.
And with Islam, a lot of Islam is based on hadiths. Hadiths are the sayings of Muhammad, which a lot of them were never written down. They were passed down, oral tradition. Mm. Although the most hadiths were from Aisha, which was Muhammad's favorite wife. But those are not what are used culturally in most countries, right? Culturally, these hadiths have definitely are definitely poisoned by patriarchal beliefs and the fear of the power of the woman and the woman's body and woman's voices. So it's more cultural than it is religious. And we know we see that in Christianity as well. And Judaism. Mm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wow. I mean, it feels like the common thread between religions and where distortion still lies, and particularly around the feminine and the feminine's power and the mystery of the feminine, and especially the eroticism of the feminine and the empowerment and the fire and the rage of the feminine and all of the ways in which the lid has been closed on the totality of the feminine's expression and how it's erupting now in the collective. And I love that you just spoke on all of that and the diversity and multiculturalism that's being woven into the tapestry of this episode already. And especially speaking about women in the Middle East and how, you know, that energy of competition isn't alive there. It is very much this collaboration and this connection with one another. And I am 33% Lebanese, so my grandma is from Lebanon. And so I grew up, you know, I look Middle Eastern, and my mom and my sister look very white. And I remember growing up, everyone would ask me like what my ethnicity was. I look so exotic. And I was really insecure about it because I didn't have any awareness or understanding of the culture and of the, you know, of the country and of the energy of what it carries, the land carries, you know, the familialism and all of it, and how deep and rich it is, right? Because I grew up here in the West. So I had a beauty standard and a standard of what being a woman meant. And I remember I used to be really, really insecure about looking ethnic. And then I had my huge awakening, my heart awakening, my awakening to truth, and my awakening to God speaking to me through everyone and everything. And I remember there was this beautiful Indian woman. She was the mom of a friend of mine. And she was sharing with me about the roots and culture of Lebanon and how beautiful Lebanon is. And she's like, some of the most beautiful women are from Lebanon and beautiful humans. And I remember like something shifted in me where it's like I cracked open to the bigger scope of the world and of, you know, these different cultures and my connection to them. And instead of resisting them because they went against Western culture and what I'd been conditioned to believe was beautiful and, you know, societally correct or whatever in the West, it broke me open to connecting to these roots even deeper. So I remember I went to my grandma who's from Lebanon, and I spent like 8 hours with her playing detective about our history and the roots. And, you know, she cooks Lebanese food and just the beauty of the Middle East. And then I started diving into belly dance culture and how women used to come together to belly dance together, as we've done together, Deanna. Yes. We've had such big breakthroughs in our tantric temple belly dance circles.
Yeah.
But I remember at that time, I'm like in this kind of channeled flow state where I'm Googling all these things and writing them down and having this visceral remembrance of the times we used to gather as women with this really rich culture of feminine connection and community. And we would belly dance and we would come into circle to talk about, you know, everything, right? Like when a woman was giving her son away to his future bride, the mother and this future bride would connect in these tribal ways, in these ways of coming together and moving Shakti and being in belly dance and communing through movement and these more kinesthetic practices that go beyond language. And so I just felt called to speak into that after what you shared. And when I was in Egypt, I also felt that privilege of like everything that we have access to that we take for granted on a day-to-day basis, and how so many of us never actually travel to get that firsthand perspective of what it is to live on a different land and to not have access to the resources that we have, you know? So I love where this is going.
I love it. I thank you so much for sharing about, because I think it's important. I think it's a mirror of some awakening that's happening now. You sharing about, you know, when you had this remembrance, and also sharing about being perceived as exotic. And because that wasn't upheld as the beauty standard in the West, which it's shifting, but for the most part was, you know, white woman, blonde, blue eyes, and then having this remembrance, this awakening, literally in your body as well, and embracing that, I think it's a microcosm of what is happening when it comes to the West being the status quo of what you're supposed to aspire to when it comes to, you know, power over people, profits over people, you know, more, like, different, but what you experienced as a young woman with deep roots and not really that ever being shared with you. It's like, no, this is what a woman is, right? We're also experiencing that right now on a macro level when it comes to like, oh, wait, and what's being revealed, what has been behind the scenes, the way the West has operated, why we as Americans do have access to clean drinking water and what have you, and what is that had to cost other areas of the world, right? So thank you for sharing that. And, you know, that's something that I learned early on and heard a lot in the Arab world, was that the Lebanese women are the most beautiful women. So you're so beautiful as it is, but literally, culturally, that's literally the saying. It's like, oh, Lubnani, you know? Yeah.
The thing is, I wouldn't tell people I was Lebanese. Like I was so ashamed of my roots. And I think that that was actually a huge thing that shaped me as the woman I am today, was this homecoming to the deeper roots and the richness of the cultures outside of the West. And, you know, I had a sister, my blood sister is blonde hair, blue eyes. Right. So growing up, I was very jealous. I was like, why don't I look this way? I was always fighting against who I was and my natural feminine design, you know, and I feel that this is a beautiful thing that we're speaking into, because the ideal societal Western beauty standards that are cataloged in magazines, you know, that are plastered everywhere. We see some of the actresses that were in the old movies, right? And it was all just so normalized. And also the way the West works is consume, consume, consume. We're going to convince you that you're not good enough and you're not lovable as you are. So come consume our products. Come do this to I remember I used to look in magazines. This was so ingrained in me. I would look in magazines or at pictures of beautiful women, and I would, in a list, I would go eyes, nose, teeth, boobs, like the things that I wished I had that she had. I couldn't look at women without looking at all of the qualities about her that I wished I had. And it kept enforcing this story that I wasn't beautiful or good enough the way that I was. And it was paralyzing. And I'm sharing about this, and I love that we're sharing about it because I know so many women go through this.
Yes, yes, yes.
And it keeps us from our own radiance and ability to be the divinely feminine beings that we came here to be.
Yes, it keeps us from being fully expressed. It keeps us from our range of expression. Yes. It keeps us from the codes that have been passed down from the roots. It keeps us from fully accepting ourselves and therefore never fully being authentic. And, you know, I know a trigger for a lot of people in my work in the past has been when I say I work, you know, primarily with women of color. And it's not to exclude other women. It's not to exclude white women. And whenever I talk about whiteness, white supremacist mindset is not just relegated to, you know, a white man who's openly racist or Donald Trump, right? Whiteness and white supremacy is exactly what we were just talking about, meaning a woman who believes I don't fit into that because it's not the normalized beauty. It's not white enough, blonde enough, blue-eyed enough, whatever trend the body is at the time. This is still a layer of supremacy, a layer of a construct that absolutely silences full expression of the diversity on this planet. And so a lot of the bigger liberation movement right now, which has been going on for years, is not about the same us versus them. It's really about recognizing how insidious that this colonial supremacist mindset is, that it has infiltrated the beauty industry, the fashion industry, the medical industry, that, you know, so that we can get free from it. And first, we got to free ourselves, just like you did.
Yes, we have to dismantle. We get to choose within. To dismantle that inner patriarchy. Yes.
Yes.
It's so sneaky too, the way that it comes up, the way that it shows up, the way that, I mean, it is like being in really devotional practice with that dismantling so that we can see it out there. It's like, we can't keep pointing our fingers going, oh, it's all them. It's all them. It's like, okay, but we've inherited, this conditioning is also living within us. So how can we uproot this? How can we alchemize and shift this? How can we have conversations like this, right? Mm-hmm. Where we're on the, you know, we're speaking from being on the other side of doing that digging, that detective work, that dismantling to come into that unapologetic expression. And the next piece that I would love to speak into that you and I have touched on quite a few times in the past is feminine rage. And the importance of that and how imperative it is to have safe spaces to express it and give ourselves safe spaces and permission to move that through our body to access more of our power.
Yes. I love rage. it's so important, Zoe. I feel like, you know, whenever I think of rage, it's this element of fire. Right. And fire, the element itself, transmutes. It can turn, you know, cold water into boiling water and then create a whole new element of ether. Right. Mm-hmm. It's literally an alchemist. So our rage is sacred. It is an alchemist. It is alchemy itself when we allow ourselves to fully feel it. Because when we don't, we see it, we see the symptoms of it in other ways. Your rage, when it's not fully honored and witnessed and held, not only by you, but others, and allowed to move through you, will come out in habits of punishing yourself, whether that be negative self-talk, whether that be overeating, whether that be self-mutilation, whether it be just shrinking. When we don't allow our rage to be honored, we turn it on ourselves. And then if we're turning it on ourselves, it's like pushing that ball underwater, right? It pops back out towards someone else and becomes violent. It becomes violence itself. And believe me, I have been that woman. And, same. You know, hello. And I still have my moments, right? I'm forever a student, y'all. But I used to have so much. I have lots of rage now. I just have learned ways of honoring it. But when I didn't have the tools, when I didn't know what to do with it, it did come out as violent. Whether that had been in relationships, whether it was at school, you know? And I feel like it is absolutely important. And we've been conditioned as women. I think it's a little bit different, my experience as a Black woman is a little bit different. But it's still there. The conditioning around like, be nice. You're a little too direct. Why are you so angry? It's got to be palatable for the other person and for society. Like, your rage is not welcome here. Something's wrong with you. And so we've been so conditioned to not honor it that it can feel scary to allow it. I had a client once who was very challenged. She was a brilliant artist. We were really, at this point in working together, we were honoring like her, I am an artist. And she was a painter and honoring her painting and what have you. And at the same time, she had this rage. Like, she was like, I just can't access it. She's like, I don't know. I'm not an angry person. I was like, you know, and I kind of held a mirror up to her and I was like, well, what you see as a problem with food, and when it comes to binge eating, when it comes to harming your body, I said, that's rage. You're just, and so I held a sacred rage session for her. And she had a painting that she had painted of herself. And because she had mentioned in a previous session, I just want to take a fucking knife and stab this. I said, well, let's do it. She was like, what? I said, don't worry, I'll be there with you. I'll hold the space. You won't, when you haven't allowed yourself to touch it inside yourself, it can feel literally to the body like this will consume me and I won't be able to come out of it. Which is why it is important to have spaces, or at least have someone hold the space for you if that's the first time going there. But it was so liberating for her. And, you know, this was her first time kind of touching into her painting, like honoring it as a, we'll put it quote unquote, professional. But fast forward, she had a whole art exhibit. She had a room. She recorded that session and put earphones for people to listen to that session so that they could honor her rage and that it was safe to come out. And it alchemized it for her. Does that mean like, oh, she has nothing left and everything's okay? No, but we're seeing this on the planet right now. People honoring their rage. No more. Absolutely not. We are done. And we're seeing it with the planet. She herself is rumbling. She's erupting. She is done with this old paradigm. Done. And so it's so important to honor our rage, especially as women, because it is the great alchemist. And it clears that way for us to actually embody the love that we are. Love meaning literally justice. Love is just.
Oh, I have tears so many times through this episode, but yeah, you know, and so much that you just touched on with rage. I grew up with a lot of rage. I had so much. I was, you know, queen of burning bridges and speaking, like, you know, I've got a lot of Sag in me. So I could slice people open with my tongue, and I did all the time, you know, especially if my parents were trying to parent me and I had that super rebellious, like, I am me, I'm blazing my path, you know, and And it also came up, it came from growing up in a dysfunctional home and seeing the rage of my parents and seeing, you know, the rage of my father and the way that rage was just, you know, such a part of the equation. And so the way that it came through for me, I would, you know, I abused drugs, I abused pills. I blacked out every weekend until I was from like 14 to 20 and or like 14
Oh, not hand
18.
Up for stop, but like hand up.
Yeah.
Same here, a little bit later for me, but
right.
I feel you, sister, with the rage when it comes to that and the blackout and the drinking and dangerous situations with men and
oh, totally
sex. And but anyway, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, I mean, I love that we're sharing about this because, you know, being a powerful woman who can be seen as outspoken, right? I call this the bitch wound in the according to Cara Sophia's Magdalene wounds, the bitch, the witch, the whore that I would taught on the empowered archetypes of them. As you know, Rose Gold Alchemy.
Yes, Rose Gold Alchemy is such a beautiful container. I loved it so much, Zoe. Thank you for that beautiful offering. I hope you offer it again. So many women, I feel like it's an initiation for women who either are coming back in a deeper honoring or who have not honored all of these, our multi-dimensional selves. And I think it was such a powerful container. You know, you hold space so beautifully and lovingly, but, and a powerful container to be witnessed to eradicate shame. Shame kept me so small for so long and in so much pain, which would just create a vicious cycle of like harming myself through the drinking and through not knowing what to do with this power that I had, you know, and rage, so much anger towards men. But sorry, go ahead.
Yeah,
so
no. I mean, I feel that rage and shame go hand in hand. It's like when we are living in shame, we're living in secrecy. There's that we're it's like the most crippling emotion and feeling. And so then we're in rage. And so rage and shame, I mean, it keeps us from our power. Yes, it keeps us small and it keeps us in self-hatred and these loops of also manifesting these really undesirable experiences, especially with men, because a woman in her shame and in her rage, the kind of man that she's manifesting, right, is inevitably going to trigger it even more. And then you look at our patrilineal line and how many of us have fathers that weren't able to show up and hold that masculine frame, right? And so we're just trying to figure it out. And that rage is so important and so valid. I actually just did an Instagram post on rage because, and these are the circles I love to hold for women too, is like the space to be witnessed and held in all that needs to move through you without any judgment. It's like you get in the middle of that circle or you get in that space and whatever the fuck needs to alchemize and move, whether it's grief or ecstasy or eroticism or pain or rage, whatever it is. It's like that's the power of the feminine, is to be able to meet it and move it through the body. And just like you shared, to touch rage can be terrifying. It's like I had a friend once tell me that, you know, like in regards to like Sagittarius energy and the fire of Sag, because Sag can be super blunt, right? And she was like, that fire can either warm up the whole village or burn it down.
Burn it down.
And that's the energy of rage and the alchemical fire of rage. And on the other side of that rage is passion, right? So it's like a lot of us feel so much rage for what's going on in the world and in the Middle East. And we can touch on that too, because I know you have a lot of codes there. And it's like we feel so much rage and so much powerlessness over the women and the children and the innocent lives being taken, and the fact that we can't necessarily go and just like fully stop it with our bodies and our beings right now rooted into the earth as Gaia incarnate, like fucking stop. Right. And so that's the rage that's moving through us. And it's like on the other side of that is passion for justice.
Yes. Yes, 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 yes.
So I'd love to hear what you have to share on that too, because I feel that now we're speaking into feminine rage and the new earth paradigm, and we've touched on the Middle East. It feels right to speak into, you know, how we can, utilize and use this energy to move us into more of, you know, the beings that get to steward that new earth paradigm and that get to be a stand for, you know, love in this world and for the Middle East.
Yeah. Yeah. Whew. I feel like this whole conversation has the seeds of all of it, meaning what's really happening now is the death of, I know colonialism has become a trendy word these days, but you know, again, my studies Duke, this is what I was studying, post-colonial theory. There's no post-colonial. We're in that era now where it's about to end. The veil has been lifted. We know that we're in the Aquarian age. There's no separation between us and the divine. And everything that has been going on behind the scenes is being revealed. So when all of this first started happening, meaning October 7th happened, you know, by the way, I also used to work for an Israeli company. I've been to Tel Aviv many times, and I have people that I care about that are in Israel. So I reached out to them to see how they were, but I also intuitively knew, like, I was like, oh God, what's going to happen after this is about to be horrific. I didn't expect it to be this horrific. I got into a place where there was so much rage, but I felt so helpless in what to do with this genocide that was occurring right before my eyes, that I allowed that to just keep me in the rage, right? For a while, which will feel like repression, which will lead to depression, which will lead to numbing out for me and not doing anything, because I'm like, I don't know what to do, because the rage was just anger, right? It was just like, I want to go online and be like, fuck all you motherfuckers. You know what I'm saying? Which, yes, fine. I'm not saying don't do that. All of us will have our different ways of standing in our power and changing this old paradigm. But we have to look at it. And just like you said, Zoe, earlier, when it came to the conditioning all of us, especially in the West, have had around this hierarchy that is rooted in patriarchy, all of us have been conditioned to it. We have to be brave enough to look in the fucking mirror and see where your conditioning is, to recognize your privilege, to hold those spaces that once you are aware of it, like, oh my God, I have been acting as the oppressor as well in my ways of being with my partner, with my family, with my community, with the people I employ. Oh, I see it so much in that. Like, I pay you, therefore I can treat you any way I want. I see it in the coaching industry too. It's disgusting. So we have to look at ourselves first and how we are operating in the world, and if we are operating in that hierarchy. And then what you do with that passion, is honoring what your legacy is on this planet, honoring that you are not separate, and therefore you bringing your gifts and getting out of your own way to birth that into the world is so important right now. We need each other. We need each other. I feel like recognizing that your freedom and your liberation is intrinsically tied to the liberation for all. It's not just some. And also to the liberation of this planet. She's going to be liberated regardless, because Mother Earth, she's going to be fine. And we get to be the stewards of that. So I do believe that there's still a lot of people in fear of speaking up and speaking out. All of us will have our own way of doing that. I also believe that it's dangerous to play the cancel culture thing when it comes to, like, that person didn't post about this, therefore, boom. But remaining silent is not an option. And eventually it will silence you. You will smother yourself. You will choke in your throat chakra by not speaking the truth of what you are witnessing. And that doesn't mean, again, the conditioning is the paradigm that means us versus them. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying it's the truth, capital T, and recognizing that whenever the option is about eradicating another people, that can't be the option, because guess what? You're next. This is the way that America was built. It's the same colonial construct that has destroyed the planet, that has got us into overconsuming, that actually believes it's okay to extract from the earth. And if somebody's living on that earth, I don't give a fuck if 20,000 years ago your ancestors were, but now different ancestors are. It doesn't matter. If we continue to uphold profits over people, if we continue to uphold and embody whiteness over everything, and again, that does not mean white body, white's not even a color, but you know what I'm saying, white people, that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying white supremacist mindset, which all of us have been conditioned to in the West. If we continue to uphold that, we will destroy ourselves. We will. And so we must speak up, speak out, whatever that way is for you. Start to enrich, share, be in community. We're no longer in this I first. This is about we now. And a new world is possible. It is possible. The mind will be like, what good am I going to do if it's this and that, and they believe this way and this religion and that? No. At the end of the day, the divine feminine is stewarding a new way on this planet. And to touch into that, so much rage that I have and am healing is with the masculine. Because it's also a very toxic masculine paradigm to believe that you can go over and, well, war, period, in that way is a toxic masculine paradigm. And there is a way that is not based on this old paradigm to live together on this planet. I truly believe that. I can't give you exactly what that way is, but I know the way of being that can get us there. I don't know if I made any sense, Zoe.
No, that was phenomenal. And I had goosebumps, goddess bumps so many times, and just felt the goddess like roar through you, you know, because the goddess is this volcanic force and she is the oceanic depth, right? She is all of it. And so I love feeling your fire. And, you know, the main pieces of this are like, okay, dismantling the inner patriarchy and colonialism and really assessing and doing that deep detective work on self to eradicate these pieces and this conditioning and to become undone so that we can become these vessels and these stewards and these chalices for a new consciousness that is going to collapse this old paradigm and birth this new one through our Dharma, through the law of Dharma, right? The law of coming into full materialization, manifestation, and alignment with that codex that we each came here with, that we were born with, that one thing that we are here to do and trailblaze and pioneer, right? And be the best at, that better than anyone else on this planet can be at that one thing that we came here with. And that's what I'm hearing here too, is like the devotion to that, the devotion to emptying, the devotion to the divine feminine, which is love, right? Yes. And compassion, but also she's fierce and she's strong and she's not fucking around. So all of that to birth this new earth. And also I love that you touched on the healing of the rage toward the masculine, because I'm seeing in the collective feminine that is a really big code coming through, is this, you know, there's been such a rising and awakening of the divine feminine, and that's not going to stop. We see the Magdalene awakening happening at rapid speed in this remembrance, right? Mm-hmm. And it's about the honoring of the divine masculine and the qualities of the masculine and the beauty of the masculine, right? So that we can start to see the masculine morph into that, right? Because if we continue with this really strong feminism, right, of like, it needs to be this way and, you know, fuck men and fuck this and right. Cause we're still like, we're creating this template, right? They're kind of stuck in this prison, this template. And I see so many men doing the work and really trying. And so I, you
and
know,
they yearn for that. Their codes, yeah. Their codes yearn for that. And otherwise, if we don't, again, heal our relationship with the masculine within, right? Because again, that's the conditioning. That's the patriarchal conditioning. Heal that within and without, because so many of us have been, I don't like to use the word victim, have been predatory. I don't know what I'm trying to say. I can't think of the word right now. Have been prey. Thank you. That's what I'm trying to say. Of the toxic masculine, that it does take work to come into forgiveness so that you can actually relate to the outer masculine, meaning masculine embodied as men differently. Because otherwise the divine feminine will become off balance and we just turn into the same damn thing on the other side of the coin that's already been built. And that is not happening.
Yes.
We're not going to allow that.
Yeah. And that forgiveness takes time and patience and to not be, again, relating to the masculine from that distorted field, because it's going to continue to sabotage our relationships, like the union that we want to come into, you know? So yeah, just sharing on that really quick. I just started listening to, I know I just shared this with you, Dee, but I just started listening to a book by Alison Armstrong called Understanding Men. And it's actually a recording of her workshop with men. And she's been studying men for 20 plus years in the psychology of men and helping women come into understanding men better and men coming into understanding women better so that we can honor our differences instead of using them to be divisive and to continue this distorted pattern, you know, and to create this new paradigm of union, right? Which is the template that's being restored on Gaia for the New Earth paradigm as well. So I just wanted to drop that little sprinkle in here. I'm not super deep into it yet, but I felt called to share just because her work is profound. And
thank you for sharing that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I could talk to you forever, girl.
I know. There's so much that we keep diving into. Oh, it's been so beautiful having you on here and just feeling your fire and your passion and your love and your just everything that you brought, these codes, you know, and just learning more about you too. And I didn't know that you went to Duke and, you know, it's just always such a pleasure. And I would love for you to share where the listeners can find you and what offerings you have coming up and anything else you want to leave the listeners with.
Yes. You can find me on Instagram at Diana Nicole, DiahnaNicole. Also on my website, DianaNicoleBaxter.com. And I'm in the midst of birthing a new offering. The hit for this, the download for this new offering came in towards the end of last year, and I was going to launch it. Was going to start in May, but something paused me. It was like, we get to go deeper with what you're really offering. Like, and I got to go through some more transformation myself. But it's called Sacred Power is the offering. And right now it's still really revolving around the three pillars of my work right now, which is soul liberation. So, you know, beyond our constructs of identity, beyond our personality, our soul, when we're really allowing our soul to be the primary leader of our lives, we are liberated. You're already free. So soul liberation, divine union. And no, this isn't a course around, you know, how do you get a man? But this is really about coming into harmony within. So fully embodying your divine feminine so that you can begin to receive your divine masculine within and start to honor the masculine in your life, healing from the pain that has been there with your relationships with men. And so soul liberation, divine union, and devotional leadership. As we move into this we, right? Recognizing that the separation is an illusion. Devotional leadership. And that doesn't mean, you know, that you need to be an entrepreneur. Doesn't mean this might be your leadership as you are in your family, as a mother. It might be in your workspace. It might be in your community. But what it is to be a devotional leader is very different than the old paradigm. So those are the three pillars of the work. It's called Sacred Power, to have a different relationship with power itself and what is power. And we really access that. I'm going to be teaching some things I do even as an actress, right? To expand our empathetic selves and to also incorporate some Kundalini yoga, breath work, and somatic sensual work in there. So that's a whole bunch in one thing, but again, it's birthing right now. So that's just a taste of all that's swimming around. But Sacred Power, keep an eye on my Instagram and I'll be announcing more. But within the next couple of months, you should be hearing a completion of that to be offered to the world.
So beautiful. And I feel like you all just got a taste of that sacred power through this episode and through feeling Deanna's presence and the codes that just channeled through. And yeah, and I'm so excited for you and for everyone who's going to be a part of that. Deanna also does Kundalini yoga classes online.
Yes, every Tuesday night. I've been doing it, well, before COVID in person on Tuesday nights, but now it's online Tuesday night, 6 p.m. PST. You can also find that either on my website or at offeringtree.com/Deanna Nicole and on my Instagram. But Tuesday nights, Kundalini yoga. We also gong healing meditation with that. I pull a card at the beginning of every class to really like get clear on what energy is present. And then I tune into which Kriya will honor us the best to move through. So it's a beautiful class. It's an intimate class. And I would love to have you.
So beautiful. I used to go to her Tuesday night classes regularly. And they were, you know, something I looked forward to every week. I love your classes. And I can't wait to come to one of your online ones very soon again.
Yes.
And yeah, Kundalini yoga changed my life. And you were definitely a part of that. That thread and that gateway. So I highly recommend checking out her classes, checking out her offerings. And yeah, thank you so much again, Deanna.
Yes, I can't wait to see you soon. I need a hug from Zoe and to just be in your divine, feminine, powerful, magical, sensual presence. I love you and all that you're birthing. You.
Thank you, sister. I will announce that Mary Magdalene's feast day on July 22nd. I typically always do something for it, but yes. I'm going to be having a circle for it and it feels powerful. Ooh. So I hope you can be there and anyone who's listening,
you too. I think I'm just
going to
have to make sure I'll be there. Yes, July
22nd. It's a Monday. Monday, July 22nd. So I'm letting people know as ahead of time as possible so that people can get it off work or just clear their schedule. So yeah, Monday, July 22nd.
Got it. Putting it in the calendar.
Yes. Okay. Thank you to everybody who tuned in.
Yes. Thank you, everyone. Mwah.
Mwah. Thank you for tuning in to the Better It Gets podcast. I hope that your day just got a little better after listening to this episode. And may anything that may be troubling you in your life right now, anything that maybe you haven't been able to see the light at the end of the tunnel with, just keep getting better and better. Until next time.